AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
I'm freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
Are you kidding me with this intro? On the night of the return?
All of the, we have returned with Wardlow. Wardlow has come back for us and us only.
The Wardog reigns
upon. We summoned him from the gladiator pits.
He's escaped with half his fucking head.
He's been through the wars of American gladiators and has returned to seek vengeance.
Charlie, Duke here. We're talking Forbidden Door.
Duke? Fucking War Dog.
War Dog's return, man. I mean, the day finally happened. Like, we're here. So I'm just happy that that was the cherry on top moment. But in all seriousness, it's a fun show tonight. We had a fun show. I like these pay-per-views getting done and, you know, it's still being a human hour. It's kind of fun. So
yeah, I know, right? Like, normally we'd be recording this at literally 1 in the morning. And somehow Dart would still be awake, even though Dart goes to bed at, like, fucking, like, 3 p.m., you know, like.
Bro, was basically Hambone and Lottery Limbo, so you just never know.
Well, Lottery Limbo was hitting hard today, too.
Yeah, it was. Well, I guess let's get through some of this show, huh? We had a fun,
I suppose,
little,
yeah. Forbidden Door 2025, you know, some Japanese fellas making their trip over across the pond with us, you know. I guess it's probably a shorter trip for them, I would imagine. I actually don't know.
I hit these zero-hour results for people. Paragon of Desperado and Yuya Uemura defeat Crew, Josh Alexander, and Hechicero. We had Ricochet and Gates of Agony defeat Michael Oku and Jet Speed. Ooh, that pairing sounds nice. Well, unable to catch 0 hour today. So
if that's our trio,
reading.
If Oku's coming in, like if that's like the, in the next couple weeks, awesome. Get Oku, like they, I wouldn't be surprised if literally this Wednesday on Dynamite we get Michael Oku's like all elite, you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be surprised, you know what I mean? But he may even announce it before the show and then like they do a trios match with, you know, announce a trios match with Jet Speed or something. If that's our trio, dude, that's an unstoppable trio right there.
That's
but
a
I
great
also
fucking trio.
Wouldn't mind Oku, and we talked about possibly being a member of the Hurt Syndicate, you know, because obviously he fits that bill for what they were looking for, you know. But I mean, like, you know, that just that the fact that we got Oku on this show makes me really happy. I mean, it makes sense.
Hopefully
for
a great sign.
Hopefully he's, you know, signed to the dotted line and we get him on the contract soon, you know, because that kid, he's got something, you know.
Megan Bain and the Triangle of Madness defeat Willow Nightingale, Chris Statlander, Queen Aminata, and Harley Cameron. And then the
That's a
ops...
scary quad, by the way. Holy shit. How do you defeat that quad? Fuck.
Yeah. The ops defeat the Bullet Club War Dogs.
The Bullet Club what so, now?
Yeah. All right. And then we get into the actual main show here, partner. And we open up with Adam Copeland and Christian Cage taking on the Matriarchy. Yeah.
The Matriarchy, yeah.
The Matriarchy being Killswitch and Kip Sabian, the return.
I can't believe they held on to Killswitch until literally like last week, right? Or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, crazy.
How awesome was that? Fun match here, man. I mean, you know, I think the whole thing here was Christian Cage trying to do as little as possible, but the crowd was loving him when he got tagged in. And they hit a fucking badass pop-up spear, and Christian got the pin. So, fun, simple match. Set the vibe. And look, Kip Sabian looked great. Crowd was having fun with him. Killswitch looked awesome. It was nice seeing the pairing back, Duke. I mean,
100%.
What do you think of this?
Yeah, two of my favorite wrestlers of all time, obviously, you know what I mean? Like, and seeing them back together as a tag team, I mean, I never thought I'd get to see it as a kid when I'd seen them separately wrestling, you know? Like, and I would be like, man, it'd be cool if I got to go back and see all those matches I used to hear about from the TLC era, you know? But whatever, you know? I guess we have the opportunity to do that now. I mean, they would be fucking silly to not do at least a TLC match with these guys as a tag team, right? In AEW or something along those lines, right? I would think, you know? maybe you don't call it that or something, or maybe you do. I don't even know. Have we done TLC and AEW before? I can't remember. Like,
I have variants of it.
We've done those matches. We just don't usually call it that. So, you know, we can definitely have them reinvent the wheel with that stuff if we want to just throw them in a ladder match. You know what I mean? But yeah. And I'm sure we will. I'm absolutely. Actually, maybe that's how, if they, even if it's not hurts any, whoever they defeat for the tag team titles, because I do think they do win the tag team titles. But would you not agree with me? Like,
at some point, yes, yeah.
But I think this is going to be longer and drawn out than I think we even thought. I think this is going to be them wrestling as a tag team for a significant period of time. And I didn't necessarily think that was going to be the case. Yeah. I thought maybe it was going to be like a short run up to one of these hot-shotted tag titles, you know? But
absolutely.
Which maybe that's even more possible now. But like, you know, before then, like, that was certainly in my mind. But after seeing this, I'm like, maybe we do this for like the beginning of next year through the middle, and that's when they actually win them. And that can be sort of like a sunsetting for them as like a team, at least, you know what I mean? Even if they're going to continue as singles guys beyond that, even if it's just, you know, just in the background, you know, not necessarily as main featured main event talent. But I like this. Yeah. Know? This is good stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So good to see Killswitch back, man. Ugh.
So great to see him back. We jump into our second match here where we have Kyle Fletcher and Hiromu Takahashi for the TNT Championship. It gets a bit of a feeling out process to kick it off. And then once it kicks off, it goes into full gear, if you will, and they just start going fucking beat for beat, back and back. Look, Takahashi had pulled off some pretty great near falls, and the crowd was seemingly biting on him. Maybe they were wanting, you know, could they possibly do it? Nope. Kyle Fletcher rolls him through and hits a sheer drop brain buster for the victory. So
how cool is that? Like, you know, obviously we have the War Dogs and, you know, Gabe, but they've already kind of been flirting for a while with them, you know, AEW. Like, Gabe's basically an AEW wrestler at this point, is the joke people make, right? You know what I mean? Like, but literally, like, the guy that walked through the forbidden door this year, that was Hiromu. You know what I mean? He got directly called out and he walked through for Kyle. That's kind of a cool spot for both guys. You know what I mean? Like, because A, Kyle wasn't the guy calling that guy out last year. You know what I mean? Like, and B, I don't know that Hiromu was the guy getting called out for that. Like, maybe he shows up as one of the other guys, but, you know, in the same way that, like, when we first had Tanahashi show up, or when some other people have shown up, you know, legends just, you know, when called, like, it's just a cool spot for Kyle to be in, I feel like, you know, like.
It definitely is. It's a great, great spot to be in. Yeah. Mercedes Moné versus Alex Windsor versus Persephone versus Bazilla. I'll let you take the lead on this one. What did you think of this?
I thought this was
a four-way.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I thought this was a really good match. It's funny too. Like, I mean, obviously, we've seen Persephone a few times, and obviously, we know what Alex Windsor can do because we've been watching her for several weeks now on television. But you know, we don't know anything about Bozilla, and obviously, Mercedes, we don't really know. You know, she's in a position right now where she just lost, you know, obviously to Toni Storm a while back, and so she can lose now. That's a thing that she can do. You know, don't know if she's going to lose this title here in this situation, but when you lose and then you have put in a fatal four way, it's like maybe the writing is on the wall at that point. So there was a big question mark in the air, you know? And Alex Windsor's been riding a weight of momentum. So there was some really good stuff in here. Mercedes had a pretty fun entrance with the, well, the titles with the British guards, you know, like that was pretty cool. I did like the idea that everyone was just like kind of attacking the champion because they all realized that it would be an advantage if they did that. I just, you know, smart wrestling, you know? And Persephone almost died at this dive that she hit to the outside. I gotta say, the thing that stood out to me the most, like, because I didn't know what Bozilla, like, was gonna be like, you know, I saw her and I was like, wow, that's a really, you know, like, it's like a svelte, like yoked looking chick, you know what I mean? Like, I wonder what that's gonna look like, because we have, you know, men that are in that similar build, but, you know, you don't see a lot of women built like that.
Yeah, so like I was like you know, really not sure what to expect from her. I see her build and I see her, you know, she's kind of like this yoked out sort of built looking chick, you know, kind of like we see like a lot of dudes with that build, but we don't see a lot of, you know, chicks that are built that way. And I thought like she wasn't really in the match like a whole ton. Like I'd say probably she got the least amount out of, I would guess, anybody. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but for what she was in, she got her shit in and she looked really good doing it. So I mean, this is one that like we're just like randomly wanting to, if we're in Germany, or if we're near Germany and we just want to bring in, or if we're not, and we just want to see what you can do if you throw her on roster for a few months, fuck it. I mean, why not? There's all these, who knows? Like, I didn't know what to expect, and I would say she delivered. So,
it's looking like she's put up some good repetitions in Stardom and even in that newer promotion, Marigold. She had a really good tag match with
So people are allowed to wrestle in both. I think that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I almost wonder if she made the jump at some point to Stardom.
Yeah, yeah, maybe she was in Maryland at first, and then, like, you know, she got roped in at the early stages or something. Not that you get roped into that place, but, like, she didn't really know the difference, and then, you know, didn't really like that place because she heard about the shit. She's like, oh, Stardom's where all the cool people are, you know?
Yeah, and she's been wrestling in Stardom, it looks like, pretty consistently. She just participated in the 5-star Grand Prix. She won a fuckload of matches, to be honest. So she got all the way to the quarterfinal and put over Suzu Suzuki. So, yeah, I mean, she's been around. She's very young. What was she? I just looked. 21 years old. I mean,
that was the big thing standing out to me. 21 years old, that built already, and already that experienced. I mean, that's, you know, that's you know, that's recipes for success. I would not be surprised, especially when she's like 24, 25, if we saw this girl, like, maybe even sign with AEW. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it wouldn't be that surprising.
Genuine,
you know,
powerhouse wrestler. Like, so, yes. And look, everyone's always scouting whoever Mercedes wrestles. This is just the truth. So she might be picked up fucking in the next 6 weeks for all we know.
Bet if we went down the title reign, like, all the random ass fucking matches that weren't even title matches, like, there's a ton of them that got signed to other companies.
Yeah. Good match here. I like the winner. Alex Windsor looked really good. Again, I think they all looked really good. This is a really, really enjoyable match. I think it got a lot of time, and I'm glad it got that time. There's definitely a world where this was a 9-minute match in the past. It didn't do that this time. Gave it the 15. Longest match of the show up to this point, and it felt like it had some time to it. Got some time to breathe. Persephone is really someone I want to start keeping an eye on. She's wrestled a handful of times now between Ring of Honor and AEW under the different banners of shows combined with CMLL. So, yeah, she seems to have some sauce there.
She if we ever go the way that Tony Khan has, or maybe it wasn't Tony Khan, but somebody suggested that perhaps the CMLL contracts could end up being like the New Japan contracts, where, like, you know, did we hear something about maybe Hechicero being like the one that everyone thinks, like, you know, like,
yeah, so, like, Hechicero's got an AEW contract, right? It's the same thing as Takeshita with a New Japan contract.
He's still signed to CMLL. He's just wrestling in AEW as a full-time wrestler in AEW as well, which probably just fits into his schedule somehow. You know what I mean? Like, they worked it out, you know?
Yeah, they're going to try and do these bridge.
We can put her on that. I wouldn't be surprised. She's that good. So, you know, and they like her enough. So maybe we get a situation like that where she signs a deal, but she still wrestles for CMLL, you know?
And I think there's something to that. And we've touched on this in the past. But it's a pay-per-view show, so I'll bring it up. I think there's something to the effect of maybe loaning wrestlers out, similar to how soccer teams do, or football teams do, if you want, where, you know, Jack Perry essentially was loaned to New Japan for a couple months, right? There's something to that, you know?
For all intents and purposes, Gabe Kidd was. We didn't see him the whole time, but he was available for AEW to use that whole time, I think. So, you know, like,
Ishii during the summers, he's essentially loaned to AEW. But, because, you know, if we can get to a point where, you know, you're bringing in Stardom talent like this. And Anna Jay was loaned for a month. You know, I would like to get to a point where it's very consistent and you're actually, because, you know, if you don't have something in the works for you right now, like we talked about on the last podcast, you know, Danhausen right now is healthy, has nothing going for him. So maybe that's the kind of talent you'd loan out. I mean, he's a little bit of a weird example, but at the same time, he might work really well in New Japan or CMLL. So, yeah, I think there's something to loaning the talent out, and Persephone is someone that, you know, she is so good. I wonder what she would look like if she wrestled in AEW for like a couple months, in Ring of Honor for a couple months. What would that look like? Who knows? You never know. Let's get into the technical wrestling match where, I mean, Bryan Danielson has been on commentary all night, but this is the match where it just, he lets you know, if I wanted to, I could be the best at this commentary shit.
100%.
Just a really good technical wrestling match. The pre-show package with Nigel McGuinness talking to British legend Johnny Saint, playing chess in the park. It was just a really powerful moment. And we get to the match, and it delivers on what we want it to deliver. You know? So, Duke, I want you to take it away from here. I mean, this was a really good time, and I think this is one of those examples of, we knew what the match was going to be, and it delivered exactly on that premise because it was just the technical wrestlers. Danielson on commentary. Oh my God, what a bonus.
What a blast that was. I mean, there was obviously a huge pop for Nigel and Zach both. I mean, they're both, you know, both British guys, you know what I mean? So, but anyway, so this was like, this is like the kind of match that, like, probably British AEW fans were like, imagine if they somehow ever had that match.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like happening, you know, so there's that. So we have the huge pops. There was technical wizardry afoot, of course. One of the things that you mentioned about commentary with Danielson, there's this line he hits where he calls Zach the greatest scientific wrestler of all time.
What a way of looking at it. Nigel's playing chess while Zach is like this, taking it as science.
He's playing like 4D chess, you know, like, you know, he's playing like the kind of games they're playing in Three
he's
Body.
He's elevated
problem.
Beyond technical wrestling. It's scientific
he's
wrestling.
He's playing the Three Body game. That's what he's playing, you know, like.
He would have cracked the code.
Oh, 100%. Zack Sabre Jr. would have saved the human race from the Trisolarians. I hate to break it to everybody, but he would have. If the Martians have a laser pointed at Earth, you want Zack Sabre Jr., you know?
I want Iguodala.
This is really great risk control spot by Zack at one point. Most of my stuff I wrote down was about Zack, and that's because Nigel does a brilliant job of just like putting Zack over in this match, and like I fully expected that to be what this was just basically like a passing of the torch of one British technical wrestler who learned from the learning tree of the guys like Johnny Singh, mm-hmm. passing it down to the guy that is, you know, you presume, I don't know if he ever learned from Nigel, I don't know if they ever crossed paths, but you would assume they've at least talked at points, you know what I mean, over the years about what they do, you know? And so it's like, you know, and targeting the body parts as a part of the way he scouts a game plan mid-match is just like, Brian is just giving all this fucking beautiful fucking insight to why Zach wrestles the way he does, you know what I mean? And yeah. I love the little spot where he baited him being, Nigel baits him in and hits him with a lariat. I thought that was pretty good. He teased it up with Danny a little bit, that Zach did. So I think that might be the future for Danny Garcia, maybe coming next Forbidden Door. If Zach is going to title, you know, maybe Danny gets the,
and
nod,
I want to,
you know,
tie that into something you just mentioned.
It's
not that Zack Sabre Jr. is someone that is like some young upstart kid. And this is something we brought to the table with Danielson, and it's worth mentioning here too. It's the acknowledgement of Nigel and Danielson, kind of both, now that they've lost the match, they want the world to know there is no one better alive right now at technical wrestling than Zack Sabre Jr. And that is when he, because he's still going to be wrestling for a few years. He's
probably,
older,
probably,
but he's not old.
Like 5, I would think, maybe, you think?
Yeah, he's older, but he's not like, you know.
He'll win that New Japan Championship
and
a few more times,
his style of wrestling, he looks like he's fucking mid-20s with how he pulls it off. So I think
Danielson's like how old, and he was most recently didn't look like he ever missed a step. You know what I mean?
And look
even when he was fully injured. You know what I mean? So it's like,
no, and it's true. So I think teeing potentially someone up like Daniel Garcia to even be involved in this match in some capacity was very smart, because there's a lot of guys out there that are really young wrestlers that are embracing the technical side, because they know how great it is.
And you have Danny, you have Lee Moriarty, you have, I would argue a lot of the guys, even like Josh Alexander, I mean, he's a little bit older, but like Josh Alexander's style is super technically based. There's a lot of guys like that.
There's
the
guys
roster.
Embracing that. William Regal's kid too. You know,
yeah,
100%. He went to
it's
All Japan Pro Wrestling.
Still out there. Obviously, you know, it's not necessarily what the FTR guys do, but it is a basis for a lot of their, you know, like sort of like, you know, in between offense between all the stuff that's pretty, you know, like the FTR of it all, if you will, you know, like.
It's just so nice because I don't think we'll ever see. It's so rare to see someone like Zack Sabre Jr. in the modern wrestling era. It's just, there's no one like him. And it's hard to picture someone else doing this. And he's just, I'm always so thankful whenever we get a match from him, and it's on this caliber, and that the fact that he is the fucking New Japan World Champion, the IWGP World Champion, it makes me so happy.
Oh, it's something I was saying to you. I don't know if I ever said this on any of the shows we did, but how insane is it that Nigel, at his age, at his level of this business, having been done for as long as he has been, can still command an IWGP World Title match? What a fucking aura that he had from his early
place
career.
At all.
No, he was perfect for this. This felt like the exact challenger you had for this guy.
49, and he hasn't been an active wrestler since 2011.
Yeah, they said it was like what, 13 years between matches or something like that. It was like, bro.
So, yeah, it's just it's kind of insane at times.
You want to talk about the gayer than gay sex pinfall combo?
I mean, that was awesome. I love it. Yeah, it's just, it's, I still honestly can't believe where we're at, but I don't find it a coincidence either that Nigel's wrestled three singles matches in this kind of comeback, you know, legend thing that he's doing. And it's been Bryan Danielson, Lee Moriarty, and Zack Sabre Jr. It's not a coincidence. And it will be Daniel Garcia. I wouldn't doubt he mixes it up with Hechicero. You know, the guys we saw in the four-way this past week on our show, it's not a coincidence. When we talk about Forbidden Door, is it safe to say this was the match this year that felt like the true Forbidden Door?
Yeah.
Like, this match doesn't happen.
This and the Kyle match, to me, that's why I brought it up for the Kyle match, too. I think those are the two matches where this feels like the crossover that... This feels like the big match crossover, like the one that's like, you know, Brian versus Zach, or... I know that was not at Tightly Wet Forbidden Door, or was it at Forbidden Door? I can't remember. Whichever pay-per-views
they did it a couple times.
Yeah, they did that one twice, so it could have been. And same thing with Okada, so one of them could have been at a Forbidden Door also, because we've had a few Forbidden Doors now, you know what I mean? But Brian was at a tuple, so...
But every year, you need one match that's like your stamp of Forbidden Door, and I think this is the one this year.
I'll give it... I'll concede, because even though I like that it was, you know, Hiromu that walked through it, because obviously Zach didn't really show up until, what, like this week on AEW TV? I think he showed up on Collision briefly, I want to say. But other than that, he was, you know, kind of just... You know, over in Japan, because, you know, obviously when you're the main champion, you have other responsibilities, you know what I mean, besides just being champion or whatever in wrestling. But yeah, I don't, you know, this, I'll agree with you 100%.
Yeah. Every year we're always going to have one match where we're like, oh yeah, that's the, you know, and you had to pull out Nigel McGuinness this year. Look, it probably will be Zack Sabre Jr. most years, or when Takeshita goes back to Japan full time, it'll probably be the Takeshita match, assuming this partnership going forward is a thing still. Which I do believe.
Imagine they brought us for Takeshita and then just leave us high and dry and go to the Fed.
I strongly believe this partnership will be a thing for a long time.
That's when the AW Gleet relationship starts.
Yes. Dude, Gleet. Fuck yeah. Yeah, so they do some attendance announcement stuff. Tekla and Queen Aminata are brawling backstage. So they've been fighting for about 2 hours in kayfabe. No, actually, fuck it. For real. And they make their way back out to the ring. Aminata clocks her with a headbutt. She stands tall. Sky Blue, Julia Hart jump in. 3-on-1 attack. Tekla does a Spartan pose. And Jamie Hayter. Da-da-da-da-da. She makes her return. Returns again to a good crowd. And I think, look, we're just waiting for Wednesday or whenever they fully go in.
There might have to be a fucking DraftKings fucking angle on Jamie Hayter returns on Forbidden Doors and fucking or anytime you're in London. That might just be an angle, you know?
Set the over-under. It's going to happen. No, I think we're teeing up for this Blood and Guts match. And I think the fact that Queen Aminata and Tekla are the centerpieces is hopefully a great sign that we are going to significantly shift in how some of these women are getting booked. And I think you're going to start seeing those two take a spotlight, and it's going to become more, you're going to have more stars because of it. It's that simple. Okay. Hurt Syndicate, FTR, Brodido for the AEW Tag Team Championship.
Brodido.
I thought the match was solid. Someone fucked up the rules. Because they tell us that essentially, I almost want to say they said the words tornado tag.
No, they didn't say the words tornado tag. As the match kicked off, Shivani straight up says that there's no tagging needed. And then immediately we see, as soon as the first little like volley goes off, because they started the match off like it was going to be no tags needed.
Yep.
But maybe Shivani just fucked up and thought that that's what that meant. But like it was really supposed to be a tag match.
Speaking out of his ass? Hold on. That doesn't happen. Nah, he'll fuck up sometimes. It's fine. We would all do it. But yeah, so they ended up doing the actual tag match, which played into the result. I wanted to mention one more note from the Nigel and Sabre match. Shout out Stephen Smith, the ref. He's the best ref. He is the best ref. It was proved yet again tonight. He's the best ref in the company.
Let's go, Steph. You're the best ref alive.
He is, and he deserves that chant. This is the kind of referee that I love in wrestling. And he doesn't take away from the match. You're not focused on him at all. And I think that's a part of it too. But he's just so great at it's the little things when he knows when to count. It's everything about him. That's my favorite ref. And I wanted to mention that he was really, really good in this match. And I when I wrote that down at the time, I had no idea what was coming later. So that's not a shot at someone. It will be later. But at the time, that was a genuine shout out. Like, dude, you're the fucking man. We get into the tag team match. Duke, I think it's safe to say, match got off to the cool start. We were kind of, you know, we were watching this together. So we got a little like, I wish they weren't doing this bullshit of the only two in the ring with three teams. We got over it. Match gets going. Chicanery is afoot. Gates of Agony beat up the Hurt Syndicate, take them away. And as expected,
they put the Syndicate in the bag.
And why was there three teams? Just so the Hurt Syndicate couldn't take the pin. Look, don't be mad. They're better at politicking than you. Like, that's just the way it is. So you got to fucking accept it. It didn't matter because FTR gets pinned and Bro-Dito wins the AEW Tag Team Championships. Before we talk about Hurt Syndicate's reign, what did you think of the match? And first, what do you think of our new champions?
I mean, it's like one of those things where like we obviously put Bandido in our new pillars, you know.
Two of our pillars holding gold now.
Yes.
Oh, you know what? Just for the new people.
Yeah,
Kyle
go ahead.
Fletcher,
yep.
Bandido, Queen Aminata, Anna Jay. Those are our four pillars starting in 2025.
Yes, and two of those could potentially, if there's going to be women's tax titles, could end up holding the title, especially if that one bounces around a little bit, which I think it might, you know, like, I mean, what, like, fucking great champions. I mean, you know, it's like, Brody King was going to be a tag team champion no matter what in AEW eventually. Obviously, it never happened with Malakai. It could still, I guess, eventually again happen with Buddy, you know what I mean? But for right now, I mean, I would not be shocked if when Buddy comes back, they're just now, Bro-Dito is now just a faction of the Hellhounds. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be surprised. You know what I mean? Like,
it would fit.
Because he's not like a demon, but he's like, the Hellhounds aren't really demons anymore. They kind of dropped that whole thing once the Demon Lord left. You know what I mean? Like, so like, it's like now they're kind of, even Julia is like just doing her own witchery and she started her own faction now. And so bringing in Bandido actually would make a lot of sense, I feel like, because then they could just kind of change the vibe to be more like, I don't know, they could you know, swap it up a little bit. You know, I feel like the cowboy vibe kind of works for an Australian, you know what I mean? Or maybe whatever, I don't know. But, and you know, you could imagine, hear me out. Imagine you put Old West style suit on Brody, and it's gonna work. I don't know why visually in my head it just works, but especially because of that, maybe because of his beard, it might just work because of his beard. I don't know.
Yeah, but he's got the look. He could pull off like this wanted biker fucking badass look.
They could be like biker. So, yeah, I feel like Bandido could
put him in
biker.
A leather jacket. I mean, I'm sure he's showed up at
leather
one,
jacket.
But
Bandido might
you.
Be the most aura.
Leather jacket, Bandido, leather jacket,
century,
Brody,
dude. Hold on, Undertaker style. They all three roll up on fucking. Oh my god.
We'd be talking. Look, I am very happy with the result of the match because the one thing I really wanted from this Hurt Syndicate title reign was it to change hands into someone. I mean, the word I used was someone that's never won it before. I was more or less talking about an actual tag team, but maybe this is the beginning of an actual tag team. So it's not just two singles wrestlers. It did feel like that the first time we saw them team up, which is fair. But at this point, it does feel like an actual tag team together, just like Jetspeed did. So the record books will show Hurt Syndicate lost their titles to Bro-Dito, which I love. I love that very much. So
look, we can be mad about it, but Breezango and the, what was the other team? The Golden Truth both lasted like way longer than they had any business. Like you can literally just throw two gimmicks together and just hope it works. And it works sometimes. Like these are two
seemingly
great wrestlers.
Already. So let's talk about this title reign. That's what we do. We like to break down title reigns after they happen. Hurt Syndicate won the titles 214 days before we get into the matches. I like the title reign.
It was exactly what I was expecting it to be. Yeah. They dominated. Nobody really had a chance against them. They had multiple matches like this where there was multiple teams where they dominated. And it, even, you know, like
what you can say is the thing that ultimately sank them was trusting MJF, because they caused them so much trouble that, like, the next time they had a match, they just couldn't keep it together because there was so much strife. You know what I mean? So, you know, like,
and I do hope we do go into a full blown like Bobby Lashley and the Hurt Syndicate versus MJF feud.
Yeah, that would make sense, because MJF doesn't, you know, not to jump ahead, but MJF doesn't win later. So what does he do? He's not going to run the contract right away. Obviously, we got that information. So yeah, he's probably going to sit on that and then hope he'll come back later in the year. If not, maybe next year. You know what I mean? So, like, he's going to have to deal with the consequences of his year that he's built up to this point. You know what I mean? Where he put all his cards on the table and tried to win, and ultimately he didn't win. So now he's going to have to deal with that. So that would actually make sense. I would, and we need MJF versus Bobby Lashley. People are super wanting it, I think. You
third,
know, like,
third longest title reign in the history of the company. So 2 weeks behind Hangman and Kenny, and about 90 days behind the Young Bucks. So they passed the Young Bucks third reign.
The Young Bucks!
So really good title reign, I think, in terms of dominant booking. It got a little strained, you could say, after March or after May. So let's get into this. They win the titles in January off of Private Party. Absolutely beat the crap out of Private Party.
Private Party literally got beat the shit out of so hard, they're gone. Like, that's crazy.
They're gone. 3 weeks later, defeated the Guns in a pretty solid match. It wasn't bad, you know? They didn't squash them. They gave them a couple more minutes than the Private Party, but it wasn't bad. And it was a good opponent at the time. They go to Revolution where they face the Outrunners.
It was so good. Juice came back and they were about to take over until one of them got hurt, you know?
Yeah. This was the first stinker. They get to Revolution. They face the Outrunners. It was not a pretty match. It shouldn't have happened. And we felt that at the time. And the Outrunners proved post this match. They're so much more than what that match gave them. It should not have happened. But
it was too early. They pulled the trigger a little too early, which I'll give them credit most of the time. Like, maybe they felt in their hearts that maybe somehow the Outrunners were going to have enough momentum to win that match, but it just never came together, you know? Like,
yeah.
But it was just too early. Like, we all knew. Like, it was just like, you know, like, it was too early in the run. It was too early for the Outrunners. Like, you know,
they honestly should have swapped it with this next one, because this made a lot more sense at the time. Hurt Syndicate then defeated the Learning Tree, Big Bill and Brian Keith at Dynasty about a month later. Really good title defense. It was, the build to it was a lot better than the previous one. So, you know, about 10 days later, took on and defeated the Gates of Agony in Boston on Dynamite. Solid stuff. And then we got to Double or Nothing, where they faced the Sons of Texas in a really weak build. Very, very weak build. While on Collision, the tag team division was progressing very, very fast. And this really didn't make sense at the time. And this is where it started to make that turn, because it felt like the tag team division was getting fully back on track. Yet our champions were not really doing too much. And about,
look, we had to hit the bailout tag tournament. That's how bad things got.
About 7 weeks later, we get to the 3-way match at All In. Great match with Jet Speed and the Patriarchy. And, you know, that's the longest match of this. That was the first one that they really gave that big time to. And then, you know, they hold it for about another 6 weeks to Forbidden Door here, where they lose to Brodito, but they're not even involved in the pin at all. So yeah, just look, as we went through all that, I mean, anything really stick out? I like that they faced a lot of different teams for the title. If I want to really pick one thing I really liked,
you know, like, it kind of falls apart toward the end, but a lot of title reigns do, because, like, you know, the hardest thing to do with a title reign is end it, right? You could, it's really easy to, you know, strap the rocket to somebody, to use the quote, you know, but, like, it's not easy to land the ship, you know, like, but I liked it for what it was, you know. I wish I would have stuck the landing a little bit better, but it's often rare that a really great title reign meets a really on the rise star. I mean, maybe Jet Speed was that team, you know, and we just missed it barely, but, like, oh, whatever, it is what it is.
But maybe,
know,
it's,
like,
Bandito.
No, that's what it is, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and Bandito has been a Titanic rise.
You've given a lot of credit to Brody
last,
King,
like,
this year with your favorite choices.
That's fair. I have been,
I mean,
Brody
King is having an unbelievable year, and you have not let that go. You have not let that go on underappreciated when it comes to favorites. So,
the guy's pretty good, you know. I wish him and Malakai had won the tag titles before Malakai left. I think it's something that's going to be one of those marks on the history of AEW that we never got that to happen, you know. But hey, it is what it is, you know.
This is maybe a little bit of vengeance for it, and I think with the current state of the tag division, these are perfect champions, genuinely perfect champions, and. In the prediction video, we kind of just felt like FTR was going to win this. But you know what? I am so much happier that this was the result just based on the current division. So, yeah, I'm very excited. I enjoyed the Hurt Syndicate.
It's funny. This match could have actually had any result, and it wouldn't have actually been bad. Like, the Hurt Syndicate retaining would have been like, okay, so it's going to be probably Jet Speed, then they'll come back and beat them because they had, you know, history or whatever. And, they've been kind of fighting recently-ish, you know what I mean, recently enough that it could be, you could maybe see that at the next pay-per-view or something like that, because Jet Speed are just so high. If they didn't lose them here, it might have had to be Jet Speed next, you know what I mean? And I actually think you probably still put Jet Speed against this team just because fucking that match sounds insane, you know. But
Brodito also screams that I think we'll see these titles back on Collision too, so it's been a while.
Yeah, I hope we get some, like, every other couple weeks we get some title defenses. Like, I hope we get some Kyle title defenses, and like, ooh, remember that era where we were literally having, like, we'd have a TNT title defense 1 week, and then we'd have like the tag or the trios on 1 week, the next, like, as the main event week. Let's run that, fuck it.
We got some good champions
right now for our Collision show, so let's lock it in, you know, because I don't care what people try to tell me. The tag team titles, because especially FTR, they're all the time, they are Collision title, you know, like, and the trios kind of float, the world title kind of floats. Okada just shows up wherever the fuck he wants.
Bro,
you know,
Nito might be a team that only holds it for 6 weeks, but has 4 successful defenses.
Yes.
Like,
no, I would be,
like, this is, Darby this Allen-esque, should be an you know? Absolute blast of a title reign.
Oh. So Brody has history with Darby. Who would Darby tag with to take on this team? I'd say Will Ospreay if he wasn't, like, you know, dead.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Hey man, maybe he makes a call. You never know. So
bring back the Stinger. No, imagine comes out of retirement to face fucking Brody.
Look, he can get up his own luchador friend. So maybe he gets hologram.
Oh shit!
Yeah. All right, so we jump into Okada versus Swerve Strickland for the unified title.
For singles titles, numbers 2, 3, and 4.
Holding all three belts. I think they do it to trigger us. I think that's on purpose, you son of a bitch, Don Callis. I hate you. No, good match. Really good match, actually. Swerve as Mr. Terrific. Come on,
Come on, man.
They played up the bad leg, which I think actually felt a little bit legit. And
I need to edit a Swerve walking out to that music with his entrance instead of the entrance music. It's the fucking song from the movie.
Sun. the Swerve stomps hit, and he comes up clutching his leg. He's hurting like a motherfucker. Okada rolls out to the apron. Hits him in the corner, hits a knee breaker on the top buckle, and then Swerve goes for the house call, but Okada ducks and Rainmaker flush for the victory. And then, look, let's be honest, best part of the show happens next. The return of our American gladiator, Wardlow.
Our American hero, get it right.
You know what? He's an American bitch. I'm taking him off the fucking board. He's out.
Hey! Yeah!
Wardlow has joined the Don Callis family. Oh yeah. My God, what a group.
Yeah, this group is insane now.
Takeshita, Wardlow, Okada, Kyle Fletcher, Josh Alexander. It just keeps going on and on. Hechicero, it doesn't end.
The Young Bucks.
Technically. So, I think there's a chance. If this holds still what they're doing right now, Okada, Unified Champion. Fletcher, TNT Champion. Takeshita, IWGP Champion. You could get some sort of group there. Maybe Josh Alexander, Lance Archer, and Hechicero as your trios champions. And Wardlow going for the big one. Here's the thing. It's going to be really hard to a lot of the AEW audience to have Wardlow be the top one with Okada there. But, you know, you can just kind of do a thing where Okada's content with his championship, right? So, but maybe there's a world where that's, you have the entire team with championships.
That would be insane.
But either way, I mean, I think we're kicking off with Wardlow and Swerve, and what a great return for him. I think
Don Callis assembles Fort Knox for Canada.
Wardlow is arguably one of the biggest botched things that happened, in the sense that he got so hot, they kind of didn't know what to do with that reaction. Put the title on him, fumbled the title reign, put the title on him again, had him lose it in 3 days. They just really didn't know what to do. And I really think the crowd will react to him again in glaring ways. I think they missed Wardlow. Wardlow is very, very good. And he is a different animal than what we have in AEW right now. We don't have a Wardlow. Like, Hobbs is the closest one, and we've done that 15 fucking times. So, I don't know, man. I'm just genuinely so excited for the future of this group. I'm so excited for Wardlow being here. Don Callis family is really quickly moving into my favorite faction. Give me some of your thoughts on this.
I mean, you know, it's insane. The faction is diabolical now. And Wardlow, I really hope this is not going to be another fumble for Wardlow, because if they can get it right, dude, this guy can be one of the top stars in AEW, because he can do everything. He's a powerhouse, but he also can do fucking flippy shit. It's the craziest fucking thing ever. It's why they put this guy in American Gladiator. I'm actually so excited to watch what they do with this guy on American Gladiators, because they could probably have him doing some insane shit that they never even dreamt of before because of what he's physically capable of. You know what I mean? I don't mean to like glaze Wardlow. Of course I do. This is a Wardlow show. But like, you know,
he is kind of our spirit animal, but at the same time, we really see the potential in him.
100%. It all goes.
He's not
back
like some
to,
young guy either. He's
when
a little
they
bit
finally
older.
Fucking uncorked him. I don't remember what the match was, but they finally let him fucking go, and he hit that fucking like shooting star or whatever the fuck he hit during that match, and everyone fucking lost their minds, dude, because it looked cleaner than when fucking Luchadors hit that shit, and he did it at like. As his yoked ass self, you know what I mean? Like, it was wild, you know? Like,
it was absolutely wild.
And so, like, if we can uncork him like that in some of these matches and let him just fucking go and let him just dominate, like, God only knows what
happened. Last time we saw Wardlow, big business. So, 17 months?
So long, Mercedes Moné lost a fucking AEW match. That's how long it's been since we saw Wardlow.
So, yeah. I'm genuinely...
Mercedes has won and lost titles in that time.
I just think this is going to be a nice breath of fresh air in all the right ways. And I hope with putting him with Don Callis, you can't get left behind in Don Callis, because Don will always have you booked and busy. Don wants to work both shows. You'll be booked, young man. So, all right. Let's jump into the Timeless Toni Storm versus ROH Women's Champion Athena match for the AEW Women's title. Take it away here, Duke. We got
yeah.
to. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so we had the Fallen Goddess Athena taking on Timeless Toni Storm for the AEW Women's World Championship. And first of all, they both had some pretty good gear here. It was a good match. I really did enjoy this one. I got to tell you, I really thought Athena was going to win this, though, for sure. And like, I think that's like the thing I'm really kind of going to focus on here after I like talk a little bit more about the match, but like, they were really pushing the pace in here. We had like this kind of like really like significant moment, I think, where like we talked about this for like months when I was covering Ring of Honor, but like she's been forearming the shit out of people for like 3 years now, you know? We've seen it a few times in AEW matches. Like, that was a big moment for us, I think, on a random ass Dynamite when her and Billy showed up once and because they needed people or whatever, and she just forearmed somebody, and it was like, oh, so they are just gonna let her do it. Got it, you know? And when she hit it on Tony, and Tony sold the shit out of in this match, I was like, we're here, you know? I thought for sure she was winning in that moment. I was like, we're actually at that moment now. She's doing it in a world title match on one of the biggest shows of the year, you know? This is crazy, you know? And then, let's see, what do we have? My fucking shit just scrolled up. We had some shenanigans with the LED boards, which I thought were pretty goofy. The first time she gets thrown into it, it breaks. The second time she gets thrown into it, it fixes. I mean, why not? Fuck it, we ball. Anyway, you know. she had this really nice, face across the rope, which I would actually, I think, kill somebody in real life, you know, if they actually tried, you know, if you did that to somebody, you know, like, you'd be decapitated. Accurate. I mean, you know, you talk about decapitations where, like, you get decapitated, but your neck doesn't actually get cut off, you know, like, that could happen, you know. If the person weighed like, you know, 100 pounds more than Athena does, you know what I mean? Like, but I think there's no reason she can do that, you know? Mina got involved to prevent a chair from being used. You know, it all kind of ended when, you know, oh, Athena also hit this really nice submission transition at one point that I thought was really nice out of, I forget what move she had just hit, but she hit like a move and then she hit the transition straight into like a leg guillotine type move or something like that. That was pretty nice. And then, you know, Tony locks in the crossface chicken wing, ultimately picks up the win. I'm sure you have a little bit more to say about this match, but like, I'm just really shocked that Athena is not our new champion, to be honest with you, because like, I thought she got there. You know what I mean? Like, but
yeah. So like, what did you think of this, buddy?
I hate saying this again, but I do think this was a star making performance that, not that Athena needs it. Athena is a star. Let's get that clarified, right? Really good match. I just think there was a moment here where you could have put Athena at that next level, and it's holding the AEW Women's Championship and the Ring of Honor Women's Championship.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say, they missed the mark again, but...
You know what, though? She's two weeks away from hitting 1,000 days. She's going to hit that, even if they have a title match planned, right? You know, like, so does she need this right now? I mean, being the, like, 1,000-day reigning Ring of Honor champion, the longest reigning champion in Ring of Honor's history, that's a lot of legacy in and of itself. And I know people are going to be like, oh, Ring of Honor. But, like, Ring of Honor is, I mean, it built what WWE and AEW are now, like, on their main roster. All those guys scrapped it up in Ring of Honor for years. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's still something. I do wish she was going to have both, but yeah.
But it was a great match regardless. I'm still happy Toni Storm's Women's World Champion. But I just, with my heart, I'm with you. I was really rooting for Athena here. And again, just nothing against Tony. I think sometimes you can do these big moments, and they, to their credit, they did with Mariah May. They didn't wait, you know? They had the big moment and went for it. And look what it did with her. She was top of the fucking division, just running shit. And it was her and Mercedes Moné just going week in, week out, just running everything. And I think you could have had an opportunity to do something similar. Yeah. Any fucking guess where Tony goes from here?
Jamie Hayter is back.
Theoretically, she's in the blood. I think theoretically it wouldn't be anyone in blood and guts.
Unless Tony's in it herself, you know, but.
Which that also kind of plays into the decision here. Because it's like, wow, we just. Who could it be? I don't know. It's pick a name out of a hat because there's nothing set up for her.
Yeah, no one's really teed up for it at this moment. Maybe we do multiple challengers and in the background we start building somebody else up, you know? Yeah. There's plenty of women that haven't had an opportunity at the title in quite some time. You know, a couple names that come to mind are like Deonna Purrazzo. You could easily make something with her, you know? I think they wrestled for the title once when and Tony's title reign, didn't they? So there's history there, I believe, you know?
It was a good match.
Yeah, it was a good match. I remember that. That's why Deonna's become, it's kind of crazy that she fell off of TV, you know what I mean? Because she's still been wrestling recently. But and she has a really good attitude about it. If you guys ever see her on X, you know what I mean? She usually is like, as long as I'm booked, I don't care. You know what I mean? I'll wrestle indies or wrestle on TV every week. So maybe that's actually the good shout would be Deonna. I think Deonna would be a great challenger for this part of the year. I hope that's what we see because she's doing really good.
No problems.
And somebody like that, though. Somebody like that, Taya Valkyrie. Somebody like who we know is good. That is, you know,
just pick a name out of a hat because there's no one lined up right now.
It's going to be, you're going to have to build a story out of something. You're going to pull it out of thin air because you don't have something right now. So, yeah. You know, here's what you do.
And
Tony comes out on Dynamite this week and then there you go. Boom, boom.
I don't want to set the precedent of these people declaring their contract and then losing. AEW's got a really, really, really bad track record with that.
That could be why we didn't have it be used in both matches, you know? Like, that's possibly why they did that, so it didn't come off that way.
Let's get into this match. All right, MJF Hangman Adam Page for the World Championship. I want to start this off by saying this. I think the two of them had a great fucking match together. I think they were putting on a full display of wrestling, and it was a really, really good fucking match. Is that fair to say?
Yes, and I'm curious, before we get into the stuff that we didn't really like that happened, has anybody else been talking about the thing that we talked about on social media? Have we had a chance to look yet?
Like, when I was scanning Blue Sky, I saw Sean Rossett post overbooked, just one word. And I feel like that's a similar vibe to what we were talking about. I think there's a lot of people that thought it was very convoluted. But yeah, so it seems like this seems to be a a little bit of a consensus here. But I think it's important to say these guys had a very good match together. I think the booking let them down. We touched on pretty extensively in the preview show, doing the no DQ, doing the count out, and not putting that contract on the line is a fucking joke. And then you try and have commentary. I love Bryan Danielson. He genuinely said, well, that just shows Hangman's not easily manipulated. Brother, what? Anyways, the fact that MJF, who cheats, who gets everyone scumbagged, couldn't just pay someone to come kick him in the nuts so he wins the championship. You never do this with MJF. This was so dumb in terms of MJF status. I'm so tired of Hangman getting goaded into everything. And that's just the precursor. We had a three count in the match, but our referee fell asleep and wasn't able to fucking call the goddamn bell. So he wakes up 5 minutes later to a foot on the rope and decides, oh, the count didn't matter. Brother, what are we doing?
I mean, technically the ref never signaled for the bell, so
that's what I'm saying. He never signaled for it because he fell asleep.
Yeah.
He should never ever hit that third count. Ever. That just it's the Jay White thing, man. It's the booking let these guys down because it was so over fucking cooked for no fucking reason. All you had to do was have MJF jump this guy and put that contract on the line. And now that contract's still there, which makes no sense. And Hangman is just...
Look, even if MJF didn't pay anybody, if you just wanted a title shot, you could theoretically help this guy out by kicking him in the nuts. He might be mad at you for like 5 minutes, but then like you're like, no, I did that.
That's
so
fair.
You win.
That's a good shot. The rest of the roster is fucking
stupid.
I want a title
shot. So I gave you my... Samoa Joe would do that if he was a heel, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And he also hates MJF, so, you know.
So, I mean, just... I don't know. What are some of your vibes on this? The match itself was unbelievable.
It was a really great match, but just...
Until he fell asleep. I mean, really, that's when it flipped over, because that was a three count.
It was funny, because we were, like, crashing out, trying to figure out the rules for, like, 5 minutes. That was pretty fun, you know? But, like, look, wrestling is really great most of the time, and occasionally you have a really great match where this is just the case. Like that, the perfect example is the Jay White thing. Jay White should probably have been a 2-time AEW world champion by now, you know, like, but this is the world we live in where he's not even a 1-time champion. So, you know,
he
like
beat one-legged MJF with no goons, and Jay White had three goons.
Maybe
on
MJF
his
is part of the, is there an MJF problem in this? Cause there's one guy that's at the center of both of these. So, I mean,
sure,
like,
but it's how they book MJF. It's overthinking it. It's just overbooking. I mean, yeah, because you can't blame MJF here. I don't think he's the one that came up with, I want the referee to fall asleep.
Well, no, I don't think he did that, but I mean, like, I don't know. I just
And then the guy woke up with fucking amnesia and forgot he hit the fucking third count. Yeah. It's whatever, man. Look, it was fine. I'm just so tired of how they're dealing with Hangman. And because I guarantee you we're not the only ones thinking this. This, he won the title and completely changed his character. Completely changed
it. Into a match by John Moxley he should never have given the guy. Then he got goaded into another match by MJF, who will then theoretically get another match down the line.
Yep. And he's had the title for a hot dog and a handshake. It's just crazy. It's crazy, crazy, crazy work. I just hope they buckle it down, get back to fucking some linear storylines. It can be a little simple, because you don't want to keep doing this.
You know, it's kind of the same problem. Who the fuck's the challenger? You know, like...
They've not set anyone up. Ricochet's the only one that's kind of been set up. But now it feels like Ricochet's with the... I don't know.
Well, no, I mean, I don't think he's going to go into an immediate feud with the Hurt Syndicate, per se. And even if he does, it's not like he's going to be fighting MVP, you know what I mean? Like, unless they do trios.
I had no problem with any of this happening until this week's Dynamite. So, it just... You're telling me, just baseline this, MJF lost the championship match.
Now, because this is the thing, is like it made Hangman look like an idiot, but now MJF looks like the fucking moron of the century.
Oh, he looks even
really,
dumber.
He didn't even try and really cheat all that much. No. You know what I mean? Like, he got the ring, but
he
could have
done
it.
The Eddie Guerrero thing and won the title. I mean, there's so many things he could have done. We referenced this during the show.
There was a moment I actually genuinely thought when he got thrown into the fucking turnbuckle, right in view of the ref. I thought for sure that was going to be the spot, and then maybe they would not do it, like Bryce would, because he personally hates MJF, not do it or something, and maybe that would be something you give Bryce that spot. But like, nope, that was not what they were doing.
I mean, could the Gates of Agony just not like hit him? No, but I want to mention this because there's precedent with MJF in this exact spot, because when he was in the feud with CM Punk, that was fucking an incredible feud. I think it was both of our feud of the year. One of the best things about that is there's never DQ finishes in AEW. MJF has a match in Chicago or somewhere against Sean Dean, and CM Punk runs to the ring, hits a GTS on Sean, and MJF loses the match via DQ. So, like, he got MJF a loss, and that was a really cool moment. That is in the back of, like, I don't know. It just, why overcomplicate it? For no reason. And then, and again, it's, we're only caring this much because we love it. Let's get that clear. It's like when, you know, we had our
God, MJF had lost on the 2023 or 2024 records, whatever that was, and he just lost. God, I remember that mattering. Fuck.
Yeah. You know, it's just like when we had a long discussion about weapons because we love the movie and it's fun to talk about. This is fun to talk about because we love it. So, I don't know. Any other closing thoughts before we jump to this lights out?
The only thing I can really think about this, because it's stuck in my head now, is just like, why did we do this at the end? Why did we not just have either a logical thing happen or like just not have all this nonsense going into it? Like,
yeah, and don't even get me started on the ref fucking magically catching MJF's punch. Bro had spidey senses. Come on, man. Whatever. It's whatever. The match itself, fucking great. So, all the bullshit aside, I think they went out there and had a good match. As good as the Revolution match. TBD on that. I don't think I'm ready to say it was better than that match. I think that match was really, really good. But, you know, MJF and Paige on pay-per-view. Of course they're going to go out there and fucking crush it. It's what they do.
Of course.
Danielson removed himself from commentary due to everything that's happened with himself and the Death Rider. He said he couldn't call the match. Respect. Will Ospreay.
I mean, they Darby did try Allin. To kill the guy twice, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Fair. I wouldn't want to be out there either. Ospreay, Allen, Omega, Ibushi, Tanahashi versus Mox, Claudio, Gabe Kidd, and the Young Bucks. I almost thought they were going to walk out to, do you really want to taste it? Take it away with this one, man. I mean, this is the lights out, kind of fun, jumble match of a good time.
Yeah, the fucking this match was insanity. and we basically got off to the races instantly. Gabe Kidd just charged the ring because he's a fucking madman, you know. And
madman, you know.
And yeah, so one of the first early spots in this match was we had some people get thrown out of the ring pretty early on. I don't remember what the spot was right before that, but then we had the Young Bucks both hit the ring simultaneously. And at the same time, on the other side of the ring, we had the Golden Lovers come in and they had a standoff and then they did a little bit of wrestling against each other. So that's probably going to be a match we would get this year or maybe next year, whatever. But I think we're going to be getting that match, I suspect. And it's going to, you know, feed families, you know. It'll be an insane match because, Ibushi seems to be back in form. And obviously Omega is fucking Kenny Omega. And the Bucklets
Omega.
Are the Bucklet Von Bucklet, the third, fourth, and fifths, you know. So, you know. Because one of them is a half man. There's a lot of spots that I'm sure that you wrote down that I didn't. But, like, one of the first ones that there was like, Darby was handcuffed to Moxley, which that happened at some point. I don't know when that happened, but he handcuffs himself to Moxley. And then Claudio comes in to try and break the handcuffs. And as they're handcuffed, he did, like, a sunset flip or something like that on Claudio, which then makes Moxley have to do, like, a flip as well. It was wild, and that was pretty crazy. In case you were wondering, the Bucks did indeed buck at one point in this match. They were going around bucking it all up, and it was crazy, you know. Probably several times. They got gummy beared though. No thumbtacks for you, bitches. Okay. I mean,
what the Young Bucks are doing right now. It's just so enjoyable.
Yeah. Probably one of the two spots everyone's going to talk about. John Moxley pulled out the fork, and Darby Allin got dragged.
Credit to you, by the way. You brought up the fork before the match.
I did.
You did bring that up. You were asking who hardballed him or whatever. Yep.
Well, yeah. No.
Hard styled that, brother.
Yes. I was like, who sliced open fucking Darby's head? Or Darby sliced open Moxley's head? And we were like, it was Hangman. I was like, oh, that makes sense, you know? But anyway, yeah. Because I think one of our friends was like joking about, like, you know, if it was in a match like this, he'd be like, you know, shanking people. And it's like, well, you know, like.
There's precedent there, bud.
It's like, yeah, they know that. That's something that happens. John Moxley likes to stab people with a fork, and that he did. Darby's ear is never going to be the same after this. It was fucked. I don't even want to, you know, I don't know how you. I'm assuming reconstructive surgery can do something, but I mean, that ear might be fucked, you know, like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what his ear looked like before. I don't know what exactly they did, but it didn't look good.
No, he took the fork and he like ripped it open. It was bad. Like, it was not good. Bop,
shibbity bop, bop, bop.
Yeah, and just insane spots happening all over the place. There was tables. Will hit a moonsault off the cage. I put it as the moonsault off the cage by Willy Poo in my notes. Darby and Gabe are dead. They're both dead. Darby rose from the grave, but Gabe's dead. We didn't see him move ever. He got dragged like a body at the end. He's dead. Gabe Kidd has gone on to the afterlife to wrestle in the great wrestling ring in the sky. He's gone. The winning combo for this match was a hidden blade, one winged angel, high fly flow. You ain't kicking out of that.
Not happening.
Count to 100. All right, what did you think of this one? I mean, it's probably going to be like Plunder Match of the Year. Maybe we should do an award for that. I think he nailed it.
It's Plunder Match of the Year. This was just a really good time. And, you know, after the match, they did a good job writing out Will Ospreay for the foreseeable future. So it made John Moxley look like an even more sadistic son of a bitch. Let Will Ospreay go deal with his herniated discs, you know, because we want Will at his full potential when he returns. So I like that they did that. I thought Gabe Kidd looked really good here. What's
crazy is Will's been on his generational run all fucking year, and he's been wrestling with a fucked up neck for like 9 months. It's literally fucking insane. It's like him and Kenny Omega are truly built like fucking absolute deities. Like,
I thought they did a really good job protecting Tanahashi in this.
Being he was used correctly, for sure.
Being really smart with how they were using him.
Even like the meme of him trying, I'm going up to the top. And they're like, no.
Yeah, great. It was great. Just all in all, Darby is, you know, he's Evel Knievel. He's the modern day Jeff Hardy. He does it all. Even when, remember, Jeff Hardy had the fucking spot with the ear. So look, I think he enjoys this, and it's some of the best wrestlers in the world going at it in a fucking cage for 30 minutes. Absolute chicanery was afoot, and it was just a great time and a great way to end the show. Because other than just a couple booking aside, which if you really want to look at those bookings, it made some things feel like none of it mattered at all. So the booking aside, in brief moments, incredible fucking pay-per-view.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't have a bad time watching this at all. Like, I was like, I was kind of like checked out a little bit during Collision. I won't even lie. I don't know why. I was just like ready for this show, I think, you know?
Yeah.
And so because of that, I was ready. And when we clicked in, as soon as like, you know, it was like for the first little bit, I was like, okay, I'm really liking what Christian and Cope are doing here. And then like, I was like, okay, when we got into Kyle, bro, I was like, all right, fucking let's go. You know what I mean? From that point on, I was pretty much locked in. So, you know, yeah. Like, other than Athena losing, I was pretty much locked in, I would say. That was like the one thing that kind of took me out. I was like, oh, well.
You see me?
Why can't Athena be our champion, boy?
That's it for us, guys. Thank you so much for checking this out. We'll be back next week where we're talking some more AEW. So, yeah. That being said, it's been a grand time, my squire.
It's been a splendid time, Corporal.
And we'll see you on the flip side.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.